In the first hour this morning, we'll be talking about music, talking with a couple of jazz musicians, playing you some of their music. Our guests this morning are David Shevin and Warren Bird. David Shevin is a bassist and Warren Bird is a pianist. They come from rather different backgrounds, but play music together, drawing on both of their traditions. They started out playing sacred music from the Jewish and African American traditions and expanded that into a kind of a larger frame. They began as a duo with bass and piano, and then started playing with a little larger group called the Afro-Semitic Experience, which has done a lot of playing around the Northeast. They come from Connecticut. They're here spending some time on the U of I campus. They've been talking with students, and in fact, they're going to be giving a performance tonight at the Hillel Foundation at 503 East John in Champaign. It's co-sponsored by the Champaign-Urbana-Jewish Federation, Global Crossroads, and the Champaign-Urbana Diversity Network. And they are here with us in the studio to talk a little bit about their music. And as I said, we have their very first CD that they recorded back in 1998, and we'll play some music so you get an idea about what the sound is like and talk with them. And as we talk, of course, questions, comments are welcome. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, and toll-free, 800-222-9455. Well, thank you both very much for being here. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Both of you, I think one thing that certainly you two share in common is that both of you started playing when you were young. Mm-hmm. Warren, was the piano your first instrument?
Pretty much. Unless you consider the human voice a definite instrument. I mean, I actually started singing at the age very young in the church choir. Mm-hmm. I remember being about 4 years old and showing up for rehearsal and then subsequently for church services. The music education and the music performing started very early. So, we can go back to that. But I didn't actually start playing the piano until I was about 10 or 11 years mm-hmm. old. So for a lot of people, that's late, but not necessarily. I think it's right in there. It works, you know.
Mm-hmm. Was it, David, was the bass your first instrument?
No, I'd be about my 6 or 7. I moved around a lot musically, exploring a lot of instruments, piano, guitar, saxophone, recorder, piano. And then eventually I got a hold of an electric bass and a few years later decided that what I really wanted to play was the upright.
Mm-hmm. What's the difference between those two instruments? I would imagine some people would think, well, bass is bass. But certainly physically, the act of playing is different physically.
It is.
The sound is different physically. Mm-hmm. Well, what are the important differences between the two?
Well, they both can actually be used in almost any kind of music. For me, the big difference is that in general, the bass guitar is a guitar, whereas the double bass or the acoustic bass or the upright bass or the contrabajo or whatever you want to call it, because it goes by so many names, is a older acoustic instrument that doesn't feel at all like a guitar and doesn't even function like a guitar. I think one of the reasons that the bass guitar is so good for pop music is that it has that it feels like an electric instrument, and you can pop it and slap it and do things with it that are very much conducive to what electric basses do well. The acoustic bass, you can bow it, you can pluck it, and it gives a very warm, rich, vibrant tone. I don't know if I answered your question very well, but basically they're very different personalities to me.
Yeah, feelings.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, for one thing, you can't ever... it's actually very similar to the distinction between playing a keyboard and playing a piano. I mean, you know, when you play a piano and you touch that thing and you hammers hit those strings and vibrate through the wood and you feel it come back to your fingers. Mm-hmm. It is just not the same when you're playing a keyboard and you hear an amp behind you. You know, and it doesn't have the same resonance, the same kind of, organic interaction between me any instrument. But I'm not saying necessarily that it's bad. It's just that it's different.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. They're related. Yeah. They're related, and to the uninitiated ear, you know, you can't always tell the difference between bass and a bass guitar or a keyboard and a piano, but when you're playing it, you can really feel, you know, there's just the physical difference.
Yeah. Well, I mentioned the fact that you, the two of you started playing together as the duo, bass and piano, and that I think it was Sacred Music that you started mm-hmm. out doing first, and then after that, that worked, and you enjoyed playing together, and people enjoyed hearing you, and someone said, well, can you do this with a bigger group? And though that's how you mm-hmm. actually had, David, you actually were working with a group, and that really, did that really become the Afro-Semitic experience?
In some ways, yeah. Warren and I actually were together in that group. That was Bassology, which was more of a straight-ahead jazz group. But we were exploring a lot of things, and it wasn't very hard for some of the core members to transition into this whole other project.
Yeah. So how did you meet in the first place?
Mm-hmm. Let's see. I was new to Connecticut. I moved to Connecticut in 93, 94, and I lived in the New Haven. I live in the New Haven area. Warren lives up in Hartford, and I wanted to meet some players, and so I went to a jam session up in Hartford, and that's when I met Warren. He was the piano player at that gig.
Hmm.
We didn't actually start playing together until, a year or two later?
Depends on when you put that jam session that you showed up for.
I don't remember when that
year,
was.
Year and a half or something like that. I mean, I do remember he called me in summer, August of 96.
Mm-hmm.
And his voice, you know, hi, I'm David Shevin. And hey, how you doing, man? We met before at this jam session. That you did up in Hartford at the City's Edge. And so, oh, okay. Vague something in my memory. And dozens and dozens of people who would come through there. And then he says something about, can you get with the concept? Apparently the other pianist couldn't get with the concept. And he asked me if I could get with the concept.
Tell you what the band was.
I read that in a newspaper article. That same quote. He said that David said, "Can you get with the concept?" And Warren says to him, thinks to himself, "Can I get with the concept? What is this guy about?"
But you know, we went and played the gig, and I got to see what that guy was about. And you know, he was very interesting person, and with a great sense of humor. And a lot of fun playing music with him. So the association grew out of this kind of affinity. We began to discover a lot of other things we had in common on a more, how do we say, a more spiritual or, endemic level.
Mm-hmm.
And I think from there, a lot of the things that we've subsequently done.
Yeah. Well, we've been talking here for a while, and I think we should play some music so people get an idea about what it is that we're talking about. And we have a CD, the very first that our guests David Shevin and Warren Bird recorded together. This was recorded live in 1998 at Recital Hall at Southern Connecticut State University in New Haven, where David teaches.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Would you like to pick a cut in particular that you'd like to play?
I haven't heard that album in so long, and you heard it last night. Was it the one that grabbed your ear?
Well, why don't we go ahead and play the title track?
Okay, that's a good idea.
So this would be cut number 3 on the CD, and can you talk a little bit about it? Where does the tune come from?
Sure. Well, that's a good piece. The album title is Avadim Hayinu, Once We Were Slaves, which is the name of this piece, Avadim Hayinu. And it's an old Jewish song that's sung at Passover time, and Passover's coming up actually in a couple weeks. And that song actually speaks quite quite nicely to the Afro-Semitic condition. Mm-hmm. Once we were slaves, now we're the children of free men and women. And that's essentially what the words of that song are. And we took the took that melody and interpreted it, found some harmonies, and put it through its paces. It allowed us to discuss through music how it means to us.
Okay, well, let's hear it. Thank you. Warren Bird is the pianist and David Shevin is the bassist in that recording of Avadim Hayino, recorded in April of 1998 at Southern Connecticut State University in New Haven. That's from the very first CD they recorded, Avadim Hayino. They now have, I think, two as a duo, and then with the Afro-Semitic Experience, there are a couple.
There are a couple, CDs. And we actually, sitting in my MP3 player in my room, are all the rough tracks from a new album that we're halfway through recording.
All right. Maybe I should introduce again our guests. Both of them started playing music when they were young. Warren Bird has had extensive experience as an actor, singer, pianist. He's self-taught as a composer, arranger, pianist, and lyricist. He's composed for theater and dance, also accompanied dance, and teaches in the southern New England area. He's been nominated 8 times as best keyboardist in the Hartford Advocates Reader's Poll. He was chosen as one of the top 25 pianists of the Thelonious Monk Institute's 1999 contest. David Shevin has written works for a wide range of artists and ensembles, including several collaborations with dance and film. He is associate professor of music at Southern Connecticut State University in New Haven, has a PhD in music history from City University of New York. They recorded together and then also went on to form this band, the Afro-Semitic Experience. They are here, have been spending some time on the U of I campus. They're visiting as guests in residence of the Global Crossroads Living Learning Community. And they have been talking with students and spending some time on the campus. And as I mentioned at the beginning, they're going to give a performance at the Hillel Foundation, 503 East John Street in Champaign at 6:15 this evening. And it's free and open to the public, so anybody who wants to attend can stop by. So how do you feel? David, you said you hadn't listened to this in a long time. How's it sound to you now?
Not as bad as I remembered. I got to tell you, it's funny hearing yourself from that many years ago, and I hadn't heard it in a while, and I thought, whoa, boy, I remembered it not being that good, but the energy is there, and it's just great to hear where we were at that time in the process, because any project like this that lasts more than a few years, you know, we return to these pieces, and we play them differently now than we did then, and yet there's certain things I hear that the kernels of what we do now are definitely to be found in that performance.
Yeah. Well, what do you think about it, Warren?
What I was really, I haven't heard it in a long time either. In fact, I haven't heard it in about 5 or 6 years. And, it was really a surprise. I mean, I heard myself going bing, 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 bing on this piano as David was playing a bass intro, and I didn't realize that I was, using already that many stark devices in order to get sounds out of that piano. I tend to think the same way about, listening to old stuff, which is that maybe at the time, I thought a certain way and had certain expectations and they weren't met. Then I get away from that person at that point in time and, come back to it in about 5 or 6 years and I say, oh, that's interesting. That's a nice painting. Or it has a nice, structure or form and texture to it. This particular recording, I was like, wow, okay. But he mentioned we just played this song last night, and I did notice that there were a dozen things I'm doing differently in terms of my technique and that I've grown in some ways. And that there were some things that I was thinking about differently in terms of music back then. But we need not exhaust all that right now. Okay.
When the two of you approach something new, how do you do that? What sort of process do you go through as you work on how you're going to play it, or whether you feel like you even want to play it, or once you've played it a couple times, you either say, yes, let's do this some more, or you say, I don't know, this just doesn't grab me, let's do something else. How do you think about that?
I think with us, maybe I can speak for both of us, and that is that I think the bottom line is, can we play the melody okay, and can we sort of lay down the basics? And so if we get through something once and it sounds okay, then we'll do it. And I mean, it's not so much about trying to perfect something in the practice room so much, then trying to allow the performance to be the place where we can actually allow the evolution of a performance to take place of a new piece. So, for instance, last night I actually, for some reason, was inspired to write a piece. And it's a very short piece, but it has a lot of detail in it. And, you know, I just could not get around the melody. So we didn't play it, but there's a good chance we might play it tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's just those very basics. Lord knows what it's going to sound like in about 5 years from now if we're still playing it.
Uh-huh. That's, I think, the difference in some ways between what we do and maybe what a pop musician does, is that once the piece is created, that's the piece. And the way you play it now is essentially the way you're going to play it 5 years from now, 10 years from now. You know, Rolling Stones haven't done much to "Hey, You Get Off of My Cloud" since they wrote it. Whereas a piece like Avadim Hayinu keeps growing and keeps changing, and there's no guarantee that the way we played it last night, if we play it again tonight, is the way we're going to play it tonight. Because so much of what we do is based on the idea that there may be certain arranged ideas, but mostly we're in the moment. We're really exchanging with one another musical ideas and seeing what happens in the unfolding process. That's what makes jazz very much an in-the-moment kind of music.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And in that way, it's exciting because then it becomes like a garden. You know, you plant these seeds. And you use the word kernel in referring mm-hmm. to the Avadim Hayinu. And, you know, you plant these seeds, and the seed is planted, and then it begins to be a part of a whole forest or a whole flora and fauna inside of the person. And then finally, you know, it becomes, and it begins to mold and shape according to the growth that's in you.
Yeah. I'm interested in having David talk a little bit about playing the bass, and in the sense that the bass certainly is capable of playing melodically, but it's also a rhythm instrument. Mm-hmm. And when it's just a duo, you're the rhythm section.
Yes.
How? And I'm interested in, do you think differently about the way that you play when you're just playing with the pianists as compared to when you are playing with a larger group?
I'm going to answer that in a circuitous fashion.
Okay.
First thing I'm going to say is, while the bass is the rhythm section, if you're working with the right kind of piano player, the pianist is also the rhythm section. And Warren has a very powerful left hand. And a good right hand, too. And so that I'm not really carrying all the rhythm myself. Warren is doing a lot of that in addition to what he's doing melodically. The fun thing about playing in a duo setting is that you can do a lot more with time and a lot more with feel when you don't have the drummer and you don't have other players around you. You can play a lot more. If I'm playing in a setting where there's a drummer and maybe even a percussionist and another harmony player, I've got to keep things as simple as possible to allow them room to fill the holes. With Warren, when it's just the two of us, I get to play a lot more. I get to put a lot more fills, a lot more notes in. I get much more percussive in my playing. In fact, I really love to attack the bass in a percussive manner mm-hmm. so that it feels as though you're almost hearing a tuned drum playing. And I really enjoy approaching the instrument that way in the duo setting. Now, I'm not taking anything away from the melodic thing, but you do want to get that rhythmic drive going.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, too, that when you think about it, that the piano, in one sense, one of the things that pianists are always going for is to see if they can play a melodic line that almost sounds like a voice. But, in fact, the piano is a percussion instrument because you got these little hammers that are hammering the strings. How do you think about the percussive nature of the instrument and how you use that?
Oh, I'm always actually I'm always actually always actually thinking of the piano in terms of being a percussion instrument with tones. And then, I mean, there's some other things you can do in order to make the piano more than a percussion instrument with tones, but in fact, very indefinite tones. And, I mean, in the context of playing with David, it's nice to be as many different things as possible. And one of the things that I've always shot for in working with small units is to try and expand the role of each of the instruments so that it becomes just a smorgasbord of sound.
The smorgasbords don't exist anymore. It would be a buffet of sound.
Well, yeah. You're there, you know, well, hey, it's still out there, man. I think there's...
Right.
But, I mean, and it becomes about sound, and then it becomes thereat about feeling being created and pictures and textures, etc., rather than worrying about, you know, the traditional role of the instrument. Mm-hmm. So in that sense, yes, I like the piano to sing, but I also like the piano to strum, and I also like the piano to pound. You know, I try not to limit what the piano can do. And I don't know if you've gotten to check out a lot of cats like, say, a Cecil Taylor or even a Chick Corea. You know, and in many ways, they're on a different ends of the spectrum. But I'm inspired by them because they actually do explore the piano to an umph extent. And and sometimes you even wonder if they're actually pianists. You say, is this guy a piano player or is he just pounding this instrument? But I mean, I guess it takes a certain refinement of listening to recognize the musicality in some things. Mm-hmm. And you know, it does become a challenge at times.
Mm-hmm.
But in that sense, I try to narrow it down to something listenable too.
We're a little past the midpoint here. We're talking with the pianist Warren Bird and bassist David Chevan. Chevan, pardon me. I got wrong there again. They're here visiting and spending some time in Champaign-Urbana on the U of I campus, talking with students. They've done some performing. They have recorded together as a duo on also with their group, the Afro-Semitic Experience. And I'd like to play something else, and maybe Warren, which on something sort of a gospel nature. I don't know. You want to pick one?
There's two on here that, I mean, you know, there's one, well, there's actually about three or four up on here, you know, you know, and maybe we can sort of do this together. You know, Joshua fought the Battle of Jericho and Lord Make a Way Somehow. They're always fun because they're very traditional.
Mm-hmm.
And then He Is Real actually is something I wrote that was more out of a contemporary approach. You know, I actually would love to hear something like The Lord Will Make a Way Somehow. It's a cool tune. It's number 10, and it's a Thomas A. Dorsey. And I don't know if you're familiar with Thomas A. Dorsey, but he's
very... He played trombone.
Not that Tommy Dorsey. But he's very endemic to the Chicago area because he moved there from the South and settled there. And in many ways is the grandfather of modern gospel music. So maybe we should check this
out. All right, let's do that.
Thank you.
All right, that is Warren Bird. He's the pianist, and David Shevin, he's the bassist. It was recorded in April 1998. The first CD that they recorded together. They have some others. They've also played together in a group called the Afro-Semitic Experience, playing around the Northeast. And yes, they are available for weddings and bar mitzvahs. So it says
Why
on
not?
Their website. And they're here visiting the campus again. Their visit here is their guest in residence of the Global Crossroads Living Learning Community. They'll be giving a performance at the Hillel Foundation on East John in Champaign tonight at 6:15. This is co-sponsored by the Champaign-Urbana Jewish Federation, Global Crossroads, and the Champaign-Urbana Diversity Network. Warren Bird's been playing music. Both of them actually have been playing music for a long time. He's self-taught as a composer, arranger, pianist, lyricist. He also has some experience as an actor and a singer. He's composed for theater and dance. He accompanies dance. He teaches in the southern New England area. David Shevin has written works for a wide range of artists and ensembles, including several collaborations with dance and film. He is associate professor of music at Southern Connecticut State University in New Haven and has PhD in music history from City University of New York. One of the things that you, I know you make a point of, and it's on, you know, the material, and it's the kind of stuff that I see in all the things I've read about you and about the band, is that what you're interested in is, and I'm quoting here, creating an artistic response to anti-Semitism and racism in all forms. And that's an ongoing mission. It's something that's very important to you. How in your music do you do that? Or is it something you directly try to do with music, or is it just partly is it who you are?
David, why don't you go there?
Well, thanks. You can jump in anytime. We've always been musicians, pretty much, since we were kids. And speaking for myself and hopefully for Warren, that's something we would do no matter what. And coming into bringing the sacred into our music and talking about these issues is something that fell in our lap in a very positive way about around the time of 1997-98, where we were playing around with some hymns and things, and we had an opportunity then to present them at a synagogue at a Martin Luther King service. And what was so striking is how people responded to what we were doing. And the more that we have gone down this particular road, the more there it has been something that has really touched people in a way that we realized that there was a need in the world for music that had a strong spiritual bent to it overtly. And when I say overtly, it's because in my mind, all jazz music tends to have a spiritual bent to it in the first place because of the way in which the music has to be played honestly and from the heart. That there's really a good jazz musician has to distill their ideas and play from a particular place within themselves where you can hear mistakes. You can hear the honesty in the music, and that's a very spiritual thing. You got artists like John Coltrane, who really opened the door for us with his music, such as A Love Supreme and some of his later pieces, Meditations and Om, that allowed the spiritual to directly come out. We're lucky that those people came before us. And then when we take the spiritual and we take the sacred and play the music, we can, through the pieces that we play, through the way in which we frame the pieces, we can bring ourselves and the listeners closer to some kind of spiritual or ecumenically religious experience. That's kind of the long way of answering it. And
insofar as addressing anti-Semitism and racism, I think you know, for me as a musician and as a performer at large, you know, I've been interested in so many different forms of music and so many different forms of entertainment and art for so long, and from all kinds of different places, that when I finally ran into David we created some kind of thing, together, there was already like a precondition where we were exploring things. And it didn't occur to me that he was Jewish and that we should do this thing so much or make music together because, man, he's Jewish and we're black. We can come together and we can show them. No, it was just that we really dug each other so much and we have such a good time working together that, hey, why not? I think the example in there is enough to speak to such things as anti-Semitism and racism. And for people to understand, it's that when you make things together and you realize that there are some things that if you put down your boundaries and allow yourself to explore some things, that, you know, there's a good chance that, I mean, and we do have differences. We're not talking about this thing where we came together and we said, let's be peaceful all the time and let's not have fights and wars. We're talking about, hey, we agree to disagree on many different things. But at the same time, we have a spirit to work together and create some things. I think in that way we answer this question here. And to me, it's the more organic and endemic way. But all ways are valid for dealing with such issues because they eat at us until, you know, it's a real challenge to face life sometimes. But, yeah.
I mean, the only thing I'm going to add to that, it's just really more to reinforce, is that when you do things from an artistic perspective, you don't have to wave your flag in the air and say, hey, look, we're being pro-integrationist, pro, you know, we're stopping anti-Semitism, we're stopping racism. It's more through deed. And I think more what has come out over the years, and the reason that we point this out is that this is something that the audiences themselves say to us. This is what comes out through the performance, is that we're working together very much in an equal way, where Warren addresses some pieces, I address some pieces, and what people see and feel from the performance is this sense that there is a way for people to work together. There's a way to pick up from where the civil rights movement left off and continue to work together.
Well, there's just the fact that the larger group, and I'm sorry we don't have music to play. That's our oversight of Afro-Semitic experience. So people can seek it out because you do have some CDs. But the fact that you put that name on it would seem to suggest that you really want to – I mean, you could have called it anything.
Right.
Would seem to suggest that you were wanting to make a particular point about your – backgrounds, and then maybe what it said something about what it is you were trying to do musically. Can you talk a little bit about what the sound of the bigger group is, or what you tried to do with the bigger group?
Well, I mean, we sort of briefly touched on it when we said that you know, it was an outgrowth. Many of the core members of one of the group's Bassology. And some of those members are actually in that group. That would be me, David, and Will Bartlett. And then, eventually, David got to meet some of my friends from Hartford.
Yeah.
And there was some art going on in how we wanted to create this group. And I think it was David who made the initial suggestion. Ultimately, we have a nice cross-cultural situation where not only is there black and white, but there's some very specific subgroups within the group.
Yeah. Well, you got Alvin Carter, who plays a very strong gospel funk style of drumming. And that comes out, Chris. He can swing like a son of a gun, but you know, his heart is really in that wonderful gospel funk. Then you got Baba Coleman, who plays African drums, Afro-Cuban drumming. So he plays the hand drums. And sometimes he gets Alvin to play the hand drums, too. So we have that element. And then we have Stacy Phillips, who's he's actually a bluegrass musician. So he plays the dobro, but he also is an accomplished klezmer musician, which is Jewish secular music. And he plays violin, and he plays a little bit of lap steel. So we have that element going. And then you
fiddle,
mentioned...
if you will. Fiddle. Yeah.
He doesn't like that. You got to call it the violin. But we also have Will Bartlett, who is... just an extraordinarily accomplished musician. He plays clarinet, saxophone, and he's doing a lot of arranging for us. And he just writes so well and so cleanly that he writes things that we can actually read.
Well, I guess the Finale software really helps too. Mm-hmm. But then, well, I don't know if it's too scary to mention, but... Baba is very interesting because he comes from, he has embodied a new tradition. Totally, I mean, when I was growing up, I was told, you know, those, you know, voodoo, you know, don't mess with that voodoo. That's the devil. He's an Orisha priest.
Mm-hmm.
He's an Orisha and a Yoruban priest. So, I mean, we have all this stuff going on, and it's a beautiful melting pot. And then when we get together, we have some commonality we work with musically. Then we also challenge each other with some new ideas, you know, some great percussion stuff going on in the group.
Everyone's bringing in pieces now, too. Everyone's writing for the band, which is really wonderful. The new album, everyone's contributing to it.
Exactly. Yeah.
So is there anything that you are you open to trying anything at least one time just to see how it goes?
I have never belly danced.
I mean musically. You know what you do. What you do in your off time,
right?
Know, that's that doesn't matter to us. We're not going to hold it.
No.
Well, see, there's a thing that goes around nowadays. You know where I'm from, and from a lot of urban centers, is check before you diss, and that is, you know, go ahead and check it out, and you know if you don't dig it, then you ain't got to stick with it. And then I go a little further with those kinds of things. You know, I tend to say, okay, well, if I don't dig it, maybe there's something about me I need to check out for a second and to work on. Just this for a second. Maybe I'll come back to this. I'm pretty wide open about a lot of things when it comes to music. A lot of things. And there's a lot of things I've already tried and I've decided, okay, I've done that. And it's I don't need to do that right now. And so... You know, in that way, I feel I've built a sense of resolve.
Yeah. Jazz is still probably, I mean, the number of people who listen to jazz and play jazz relatively small compared with other kinds of musics, other popular musics. And it's been that way for a while, and that doesn't seem likely to change.
It's funny you say that. I don't know if I should cut you off, but
a
number of people now have been suggesting that we not call ourselves in the group, not as the duo, but in the group, a jazz group. They say, hey, man, you're a world music jam band. I'm like, okay, sure.
That's marketing.
That's right.
Marketing. So,
but even using the label jazz, it's funny. If I talk to one of the students here at U of I and I say, well, yeah, we're jazz musicians, I get one response. If I say, yeah, I play in a jam band called the Afro-Semitic Experience, I get a whole other response. And so I think that while you say it's marketing, I think also, at least in the minds of some people, there is an automatic disconnect when they hear certain words, whether that's a good or bad thing. Well, I think it's a bad thing because I happen to have come up in the tradition and I love the jazz tradition. I understand why people call it jam band. It's to keep it contemporary and fresh, but we haven't changed a single thing we do.
Hmm. What do you think about that?
I tend to be a little bit staid when it comes to, you know, I don't mind. I'm proud of being a jazz musician, and I have pride behind it. Hmm. Nonetheless, I'm also very wide open about what I call myself. So, I mean, if it works for some people to understand that we're a jam band and they'll come see us play, perhaps that's cool. But I will always emphasize that, you know, I play jazz music, man, and I use a jazz approach to playing.
Right.
And it's nothing to besmirch because, I mean, jazz as a process of playing and jazz as a tradition and a legacy is very rich and unfortunately underemphasized in this country. Yeah. I've been to a lot of places in the world, and they understand and value this beyond what you can fathom here about jazz music. Sorry.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but we're just going to have to stop because we've used the time. If you're here in and around Champaign-Urbana, you can hear our guests, pianist Warren Bird and bassist David Chevin. They'll be giving a performance tonight at Hillel at 6:15. That's at 503 East John in Champaign, and it's free and open to the public. Otherwise, you can hear them whistling on their new CD. They've recorded as a duo and with the band Afro-Semitic Experience. Thank you very much.
It's
wise guys.
Really, it's been a treat. Thank you.